William Renner on June 18th, 1981.
This is a tape made with William Renner on June 18th, 1981.
I just want to, you know, start this thing going so I can... Anything.
Yes, there's a lot of stuff in there, and it's in there about the big fight that the furnace employees had.
Yeah, I saw that. Well, you mean that down here where they're digging now, there was something and then it burned down or fell down or got old?
No, they just abandoned it after the Civil War. Sometime after the Civil War, they abandoned it. See, a long time after the Civil War, this Wilmington car wheel works over Wilmington, Delaware, bought all the iron they could make here. And they didn't bother about hammering anything out. They just run it into pigs and sent it over there and made wonderful car wheels.
Oh,
Wilmington, Delaware. Everything was shipped over to Delaware.
And that was called the Wilmington car wheel.
Yes, I think it's a Wilmington car wheel. It's on the wheels. It's on the car wheels.
It's for railroad cars.
Yeah, railroad cars. At that time, everybody's building railroads, and there's big demand for wheels.
So they bought all the iron?
All the iron went over there, just in pig shit for them, you know. Yeah. Smell it here, and over there it went. Ship it over there. See, the Messing Around Railroad, you know, came into Thurmont in 1872. Before that, they had to haul it to Frederick to ship it on the B&O.
They hauled it, that's when they hauled it in the wagons. Teams.
Six-horse team, But then as soon as the railroad come, you know, in the 1870s, all they had to do is ship haul it to Thurmont. And then in 1886, the Wishes got out and built a railroad down here to the works.
Was that the same track that the trolley ran on?
Uh-huh.
Ran on the same track?
Yeah, it was back in 1907 or 8 along in that area there. It was in litigation in the hands of receiver. And I think there's a $33,000 mortgage on this railroad. And when the WF&G, that's where it started, you know, the Washington, Frederick, and Gettysburg Railway. First, they came down here and couldn't come through this because they couldn't get a right-of-way. They stopped at the end of McPherson's land. And then the people used to get down there and go on the train and go to Frederick, come back, get off there and walk up here. And then when Joseph Throb bought it, they must have had some assurance that he was going to give them a right-of-way. They come on through, but never did get a right-of-way. But they went on through, and they bought the mortgage. They bought the mortgage on this railroad, and then they owned it.
Mm.
Yeah, that old thing flourished there for a while. They had the little dinky engine called the Monocacy Valley. Just a little engine that hauled two cars back and forth to Frederick. They had, coaches, you know.
Yeah.
Then they hauled some freight. Then later on they got bigger motors. Well, that was used until they electrified it, you know, and then they used electric motors.
Yeah, I remember when the streetcars used to run around over Frederick County in different places.
Yeah, I used to be down here every morning. And that thing hit me one morning down here. Nearly killed me.
Is that right? It used to go across the mountain, of course, into Myersville.
It was the 31st of December in 1948. My wife always would get up and get breakfast, you know, and call me, you know, and this morning she didn't get awake. This special morning didn't get awake. Well, when I got awake here, it was time to, I had men working up here, building new buildings up at the Acres place.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I jumped my clothes right quick and went up there and put the men to work, and I come back in for my breakfast. And it was snow blusters and snow a while, snow so hard you could hardly see. And after I eat breakfast, you know, started to go back down. And I got there and looked up the track, you know, didn't see anything. I started across the track, and my God, by the time I got middle of the track, here he was. He hit me. He's coming flying. He run clear away down there below the crossing before he got stopped. I was in a 1938 Roadmaster Buick, and he hit me and spun me around there and set me down on a pile of old used ties on the other side of the railroad. And my head went out through the wind deflector up here, and I got a slight fracture up here from that.
Hmm.
It took me 2 years to get over it, but I finally got over it.
Yeah, well. That's a close call.
Yes, that was that time, by golly.
Do you remember as a child the furnace in operation, seeing it with all the color and light and everything that they...
Why, yes, we lived in Lewistown. And when it was warm enough, we would sit outside and watch, wait for the bell to raise. See, when they raised the bell, they had a charge of, iron ore and coke, limestone on that bell. And when they'd raise it, it would go down in the fire, in the frying chamber. And when they'd raise that bell, it would open up and the fire would fly out of the top there and light up the sky everywhere. And people would sit out there and watch, wait for that there.
Like fireworks.
Yes. It would open up and the sky would light up.
Yeah.
Yeah, everybody said, we're waiting for the bell, for them to raise the bell. Waiting for them to raise the bell.
Yeah. And then after it closed down.
I don't know how long it took then to melt it. As soon as they would melt that and then run it out into pig beds and then run the slag out. And as soon as they got it clean inside, they'd raise the bell, let another charge come down.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how often it was, but it wasn't too often, I don't think.
Yeah.
I imagine, maybe a couple hours, I believe it was. Some, maybe an hour or 2 hours or whatever it was, but I don't know just how long.
Yeah.
But I was up there when it was working. It scared me nearly to death. I was only about 3 years. I wasn't quite 4 years old yet. And we happened to go up on the lookout, and they was making up the pig beds. We went in through the casting house, anybody could go in there. And we go up to open the darn door and got in the stairway and walked up the stairway. It was, I guess, 60, 65, maybe 70 feet high. Then you could look way down toward Westminster and all around, you could see everywhere. That was a big attraction. People would drive out here from Frederick to walk up on that to look around.
There was an Indian on top of the thing.
Yeah, old Sequoia.
Yeah.
Yeah, he even said that. And there's some contention about that Indian. A lot of people said when the furnace was torn down, Frank Fraley stole the Indian. They said he stole it one night and hid it. It was made out of copper.
Yeah, I've seen a picture of it.
So I don't know whether, I never seen anything of it or never heard anything about it. I don't know whether he did or not, but when I moved over to an old manor house, 1926, Mr. Jakes had given the church the casting house. It was nothing but stone with a roof on it. Stone walls, you know.
Yeah.
And they wanted stone to put a piece on the church. So he gave them that. And when he was tearing it down, I went down there one day and Bill McGill and the Sturdyman, I think it was the other man was named Sturdyman, they were masons, you know. And Bill said, they had the
Stottlemyre, somebody said his name was.
Well, could be. Yeah. I just don't know. But anyhow, there was a corner stone. It was marble. It told about when it was built, who mm-hmm. built it, and all. And Bill McGill said, here, Billy, said something you ought to take up the house. And I tried to lift it, and I said, my Lord, I'd take the wheel, but I couldn't carry that. So I was going somewhere, and I said, I'll get it to see if I'll borrow a wheelbarrow from somebody and take it up the house. And when night come, I forgot it. The next morning, it was gone.
Is that right?
Yeah, it was gone. I don't know where it went.
Heaven's sakes.
Yes.
Well, then it may still be around somewhere.
Without a doubt.
If a person just knew where it might be.
If it's around, it's around the Fraley somewhere. Mr. Jakes, the old store, the old commissary, Mr. Jakes gave that to Frank Fraley to tear down, and he tore down, I think it was 1926, late, or 27. I believe it was 1927. He tore that down, and the upper story was full of old discarded colonial furniture. And there was three spinning wheels, old-time spinning wheels, and most all of them was pretty good shape. And a lot of other old furniture was stored up there out of the big house, out of the people that lived in the big house. And he got that, and, everything kept quiet. You never heard anything about it.
They
must imagine antique dealers got it.
Yeah, I was going to say they must have sold it, because there wasn't anything in that house.
All that stuff, if it hadn't been sold, should be around Fraley's up there somewhere.
It's not there. It's not in that house, or, wasn't when they had sale.
Well, that store was built after 1907, because Frank Fraley bought the place in 1907 for $1,000. He bought it from the church, and I dug up the deed with the Fitzhughes, William and Sarah Fitzhugh, deeded that to the church and was never to be used for anything but a parsonage. But then in 1907, they didn't have many members up there, and well, all the vestrymen, most all of them couldn't read or write.
Well, you know, at that time, it wasn't actually a parish. It was under the bishop, and they sent some people out from Balmer to see about what was going on up here, and they made the decision down there to go ahead and let it be sold.
Yeah, it was sold, and it's $1,000.
Yeah, I know. I've seen the records from the church, what happened when the church got rid of that land, which was a terrible thing.
Mm-hmm. It's just, and Frank built that store, part of it. Now the front part, well, you can see in there where the floor, you know, joins, the front part was built in 1927.
Yeah. Yeah, I know he built that. Well, what happened then, that big old building that was up there across that had been the old store, was that where they located that Blue Mountain Iron and Steel Company after the furnace shut down? There was a big old frame building sat across from...
Oh, that was the shops.
Yeah.
Millwright shop, blacksmith shop. Yeah, right across the road.
Yeah.
And it was scale, for wagon
yeah.
scales there. And mind you, Mr. Jake, give that to somebody to get out of there and haul away. Just give it to them.
Well, it wasn't in very good shape, was
no.
it? It looked like, and there's pictures of it when the Blue Mountain Iron and Steel was there, that it looked like it was in bad shape.
Then the state roads wanted to widen the road, and they wanted to cut in, slice a piece of yard off. Well, they said that they would build a retaining wall, and Mr. Jake said, well, there's the old mule barn, tear it down, the punny stone there, your stone go. Told that mule barn, and there's where it's at, in that wall along the yard there. And that old man, Charlie Stover, from down around Detour somewhere, come up there and built, him and his boys built that wall.
Which wall is that now?
That's right along the road. You go up the road, there's a high wall.
Oh, up at the manor house.
Then the back entrance,
yeah.
you know,
yeah.
two big piers.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah they built that.
Yeah.
Yeah, they, I don't know. I imagine the road, I guess the road paid for it, I reckon, because, well, that was the right expensive job, digging in, putting the footer in there, and tearing that barn down and getting all the stone over there and all.
Well, then, after the state of Maryland got it, is that when all the shrubbery went to Washington?
No, when the federal government had it.
Oh, the federal government
yeah,
had it.
Yes, that's when it went. Some of it went to Richmond, Virginia. And the others went down to the White House. It's still on the White House lawn. And mind you, that bloomed while we was there. And it's in there. I'm pretty sure it's in there about it. And it had a little white wax flower. Each one of them little twigs come out, had a little wax flower right on the end. White. Oh, it was pretty.
I'll bet it was beautiful.
And then Mr. Jake said that he found out that that only bloomed when it was 100 years old. When it's 100 years old, it bloomed. Well, it bloomed while we were there. And that was, I don't know, either 1927 or 1928. And then the government got it about 1935. And then I lived in there until, well, we moved up there, up to Thurmont. Let's see. We moved up to Thurmont in 1937. The roof got so bad, and I tried to get Williams, as a project manager up here, to put a roof on it. And they had a shingle mill, and had all this mountain of wood, you know, and had WPA labor. And I said, you can put a roof on there for $100. He said, the hell with that. I want to see that damn thing tore down. He was from Richmond, Virginia. He said, they made iron here during the Civil War to shoot at us rebels. He said, I want to see that thing destroyed. Told me right out of his own mouth. Person like that sent them up here to run a project like that.
Hmm.
Oh boy. Well, when they first come up, all the personnel were from the Deep South. And the engineer was a fellow named Bamberg from Bamberg, South Carolina. He didn't stay here very long, he left.
Hmm.
Yeah, they was all still fighting the Civil War.
Yeah. Well, it certainly is a sin that it was let fall down.
Yeah, all it did was a roof.
Yeah.
Everything else was good. And my wife kept that nice and clean inside, and every 2 years I'd whitewash it. And I got a picture of it that I just got done whitewashing it and took a picture of it. Nice and white.
Yeah.
Of course, it'd take me a week. I had a 40-foot ladder. I'd get up there and have a whitewash brush on a long handle and reach out as far as I could reach, you know, and find out I could get up to the chimney, you know.
Yeah.
And there was one of the chimneys, you could go up above the third floor. There's a place to go up, and Gwynia, you could go in the chimney and come out. It was open that you could go in there and crawl out and get up on the roof. And no water ever come down in there. Hmm. See, it was over, well, I'd say it was an overhang about like that. Where this chimney, you know, went around out like this and around.
Yeah.
And then you could go up there and you'd go in it. You could go in this a piece and then come out like that on the roof.
Yeah, yeah.
But I see now that it's fell off. It's broke, that chimney, that is the east side, it's broke off now and fell down. Some of it fell down on the outside. See, I got something I want to show you. You know anything about a contract was put out by the General Services to clean that thing out and stabilize the walls?
No.
My son Bob bid on it.
Just recently?
Well, I don't like it. I think the date's on the thing. I believe it was in February, March. It said the specifications only called to clean out the debris, dispose of the debris and pile of stones back on the property and stabilize the walls. That's all called for it. And he bid $10,000 on it. I don't know whether you can understand that or not. I don't know.
Yeah. Well,
Bob said it looked like somebody in Chevy Chase got that. It was $250,000 there.
Yeah.
But that's one of them ripoffs.
Well, now, of course, the state owns it now.
Yeah.
I don't know. Wonder when they're going to do the work.
I don't know. It's something I don't know. It's complicated. I can't hardly understand it, but my son Bob, he said, I bid on it. I was up there and looked. He said, I bid $10,000. I didn't care whether I got it or not. He said, we got plenty of work, but he said, I just went up there and bid on it. Incidentally, Bob was born in that house. He's taken over the Weller Brothers Construction Company down in New Windsor.
Oh, I see.
And he got an invitation to bid, and he bid on it, and that's what he got back.
Hmm. I don't know.
I wonder sometime we have. I wonder when our next meeting is.
I have no idea. No idea. It would be awful good if, you know, if they would do something like that, if they clean it up and stabilize it so it doesn't fall down any further.
Yeah, see, he could go to clean everything out inside, rake everything out, all the dirt, and burn all the old wood and stuff, you know, dispose of it.
Yeah.
And then stack the stones back and then prop the walls that needed propping.
Yeah. Well, they aren't even doing all that much up here at this one they bought right across from this, right below the store there, the state bought.
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh.
They hardly even keep that cleaned up.
No. Well, Sandy's got all them in and laying around doing nothing.
Yeah, he doesn't do much, no. I can tell you. It seems to me he could get in there and do a lot of that stuff.
Well, in the wintertime, guys don't do anything. Draw the money.
Yeah. Yeah, that's too bad, because if he'd show more interest in the thing, it would certainly help.
Oh, yes.
But for some...
I often try to get him after, you know, at night. I've never been able to catch him at night. I don't think he answers the phone.
No, he's... I know, that's a poor... Well, do you have in here about the Indian that they were supposed to put in the iron casket and everything? Is that all written down here?
No, I never even heard that here.
Oh, I see.
I know that there was a slave thrown in the furnace, but I didn't put that in. Some of the old timers said there was a slave thrown in the furnace one was giving them trouble all the time, and somebody got out there one time and they was charging the furnace, that is the old charcoal furnace, and they just kicked him down in it. That was the end of him.
Well, they used slave labor then up there in the furnace.
According to this graveyard, you know, there must be at least 150 graves back here.
Yeah, I know. There's quite a few graves.
A lot of, and they hardly touch it. As far as they've only got out, I don't know, somewhere between 25 and 30 bodies.
Wonder if they're coming back and get any more.
I don't think so.
Well, will the road disturb that at all?
Well, they're going right through where they dug. See, they could only dig where on the right of way.
Oh, I see. Then the rest of the area, it won't be disturbed by the road.
Well, see, that's on me down there. The rest of it is on me down there.
Oh.
But I understand they're going to take more land. They're going to get this federal aid, and that means they got to make more easy slopes. And I like this slope out here. They got to raise that slope some, have it more easy. If anybody runs off the road, it won't be too steep that they can't run back up on the road. Tom Summers, you know, he's the district engineer.
Yeah, I know Tom.
He was out here to see me here, I guess a little over a month, or about a month ago, maybe a little over, might have been 5 weeks. He said, Mr. Renner, first he called me and wanted to know if I was home, and I said, yeah. I said, I'd like to come out and talk to him. He said, well, come on out, Tom. I knew his father. And he came out here and says, Mr. Renner, I come out here to serve notice. And it said, within a year, we're going to we're going to knock that garage down of yours. See, they own it. When they bought it first, they bought just 7 feet this side of the garage.
Oh.
But he said, before, we'll give you 30 days notice before we tear it down. And he said, I could write you a letter on this, but he said, come out and tell you, I know you're told, see. So it looks like they're going to put this through.
Well, that'll bring that road pretty close over here, won't it?
Yes. If they get another 20 feet, they'll be just only about 20 feet, 20 couple of feet from my back door.
Yeah.
With the right of way. And then the slope on that, well, if they fill that, they won't be able to get a truck in here to the house unless they make me another driveway. I never got my front finish. I was going to put a driveway up here.
Well, you'll have to get them to make you another
driveway.
Yeah, they're going to have to. They can't stop you from coming into your place.
No. You see, I always planned to come up here just around, make a long loop around there and go back.
Yeah.
So we could drive in here right up here to the front porch. And I never got it done.
Well, that sounds like a good idea. Get them to do it.
I always worked. I built here in 1938 and kept building at it and doing things. And finally, even after I retired.
Yeah. This is a nice place.
I knew it was going to cost a lot of money. I never had the money until after the road went through. And after the road went through, I seen what it was going to do, and I just gave it up. Or I'd have had a driveway right up here. You could drove right there to the front porch.
Yeah. Yeah, wow. Well, where do you have any idea where the slaves might have lived that they used in the...
Well, there were slave quarters up there back of the big house. But then these log cabins, I imagine these log houses, I imagine they lived in them. There's a lot of these old houses gone. You know, right back on me here was a big one. Right above the old graveyard, right across the road from the graveyard was a big one.
There was a couple up back of where the furnace stands, too, wasn't there?
Yeah, they were six up there in a row, you know, up there from the creek up, again the hill. They were six there. And then there were one down, well, the road covered where one of them was. Then across the creek, there was two more over there. And then there were two up on the hill above this water hole. And then there were two more, well, this road right back here on me, covered up the old Kelly house. That was a big one. And then there was another one back here across the road, like I tell you, from the graveyard was one. And then all these houses over here, and then this high house down here, and
it was down past where Robertson's lived, down there on the curve.
Yes, it's Buck Fraley built it, you know, the first one, as you go down, it was called Feather Bed Lane.
Yeah.
Blacks Mill Road. And right below that house, there's a bunch of, I don't know, shrubbery there, and right in that shrubbery was this big old, what was a great big chimney butt, where the house burned down. And then these houses down here belong to it. You see, they bought all this over here in 1772. Then there was five houses. And then there was two. Well, down there, right across from where they're digging, there's two houses. Well, there was two there then.
Mm-hmm.
So there was, I don't know, it was houses enough, I guess.
Yeah.
I don't know how many lived in one house with the, well, you take six and two is eight, two is 10, 13, 14, 16, and five is 21. I guess they had.
Well, of course, if they used slave labor, they lived a lot of people in one house a lot of times, too.
Yes, because in 1800 census? I think it was 1800 census. There was 1,502 people lived here in the area, the furnace. That's a lot of people.
Yeah. Well, a lot of them, of course, I guess they needed a lot of people because that was a big operation. That employed a lot of people.
Yes, about 360 men worked in the...
And they all had families.
Yeah, wood chobbers, charcoal burners and miners.
Yeah.
And people worked the furnace and, then people hauling the iron away from it and hauling supplies in.
Yeah, an operation of that size would take a lot of people. It's just a...
Yeah, and then up the road, they had some houses on up the road. You know where Bradley Carbo has his place?
Yeah.
Well, right on this side a little bit, he's got a bunch of lawnmowers. Right about there was the old meeting house. It's a big old log house. Well, he used it on Sunday as a church, and then on Saturday night they had anything going on, it'd be a meeting house, and good Lord, the fights that occurred. Oh my. This used to be an awful rough place.
Yeah, that's what I've understood.
I heard Jess Wolf say one time that Dick Reed said something about him that somebody told him, you know. Jess said, you wait till I meet that son of a so-and-so, and he cut himself a big hickory club. But on Saturday night, he went up there and looked in the window, and old Dick was in there. And he stood outside and waited. When Dick come up, come down the steps, Jess walked up and walked him upside the head with that club. Old Dick never batted his eyes, and Jess dropped his club and run. Oh, boy.
Yeah. Man, it must have been something, really.
Oh, yes. Yeah, and it's up along the mine, up along the road, there's a lot of houses that's gone.
Yeah.
Now, after you go up through where the mine bank is, there's a bunch of houses. You know, there's a little stream goes through there, comes out of the mine bank. Right across there was a house called, it got to be known as Burnt House Hill. And, way back around about the turn of the century, a fire started in there, and the old man lived in that house. At that time, there was a lot of shoemaking. And the fire got to burn the shoemaker, and he inhaled a lot of that smoke and killed him. Shoemaker's poison, you know.
Yeah, I know.
And that got to be known as Burnt House Hill. Well, that there was one. And then the Bryce place, well, the Meissners live there now. There was an old log cabin, and the next one above there was an old log cabin. And then on down on that same side was, Nick Sweeney place was one. And right beyond Downs, you know, there's one, Potts, that was one, and a piece built onto it. And then on the other side, where Downs had their place, was, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. There was five or six houses there, and they were just, the weatherboarding was vertical, you know, out of these old, hemlock boards.
Yeah.
Big wide hemlock boards. And the way they made them, mighty, they cut them out, lay them down on the ground, cut them out there and get the shape, and nail a 1x6 across here and a 1x6 up here, then put them all together. And then the floor joists above, they'd set on that 1x6, mind you. That's all was holding. Set on that 1x6 up there. And that's the way they were built. And let's see, are they any of them standing yet? These are all going down here. Seems to me, I thought there was one. Let's see once. Yeah, across the creek there was one. Now, that road across the creek, the Kokels built that, and that was known as the New Road. The Kokels built that. But it seems to me there was one of them old houses standing somewhere.
Where's that now? That's down in there back of where you turn in up there now on across from the from that entrance to the manor house. You
yeah,
turn
right
back Featherbed Lane.
Yeah, right going up, you know, the town, or a whole row of houses over in there.
Yeah.
That is known as the New Road. The Kokels built that, but there was two houses there. If you go in, no, there was, yeah, Herb Sweeney's house. The house of Herb Sweeney, that's the only house that's vertical boarding, but then it's been covered up here something else, kind of weather.
Yeah.
That's the only house left for that vertical boarding. And that was an old one of the old original houses. You had Skip Miller's one, and the old Dave Green house, and George Brace house. There was four. There was four of the old original houses, you know, there. And, well, that, I don't know, they had 30, I guess they had 30, 35, maybe 40 houses here.
All sitting back in, there were a bunch of them sitting back in there.
Yeah, they built one here and built one up here in the woods, you know,
yeah,
somewhere.
Yeah. Well, now, up there at the mine bank, didn't they used to put the ore in little dinghies up there and bring it around
Yeah, the Narrow Gauge Railroad, yes.
Yeah.
You know that car that used to bring down up here when they had the Cutter Fest? That was one of them.
Yeah.
And they all had brakes on. They'd get a whole string of them, you know, and then they'd just start them. If the dinky wasn't there, you know, well, the dinky would pull them back.
Yeah.
But lots of times, they would just cut them loose, and a couple of men would get on there to draw the brakes, you know, and get down. When they get down across the creek, they'd break them down so they'd slide right into the furnace where they could dump the ore. Right-handed.
Oh, it was all downhill, so they'd run down from up there.
And the ore was dumped down over that wall, that back wall, you know,
yeah,
back of the
yeah.
place. That car, the railroad came right in on top, and the ore would be dumped down. They'd be got in buggies there and wheeled over to the elevator and went up in the elevator to this new furnace where, you know, dumping in on the belt.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. And there must have been really, really big, almost like quarries where they were taking this that looked like
yeah that big that
those
big,
pictures
that big.
Show it just looks like a huge stone quarry with a huge hole there.
Yeah, well one of them big leads, they call them a lead, you know, where they dug out one of them, they filled up with stumps and debris when they built that road through.
Yeah,
they had some place to dispose of the stumps, like Ted Gardner over here, he left and filled one of his up with stumps and all, and for that he got a hard road into his house. Yeah, he made a deal with them there, and they dumped their stuff over there. They would right up over here, right over there, well, you can see over there from my house, where they'd go up and dump it. And all this stuff in here, all the stumps and everything, it went there and up there at the two places, and they filled up these mine banks.
Yeah.
That one up there, there used to be a boiler, a steam boiler back there where they furnished steam for the grills, you know. Because I know back in there one time they run several drifts back under the mountain, out of the rock. But I doubt if you could find them anymore. I guess everything slid down, trees has fell down and slid over.
Yeah.
And there was an air shaft back there where it was boarded up. It was about that big a square. And was the boards come out of the ground about that high. Just open on top, nothing. Anybody would have jumped down here if they could have been in. It's just about that high above the ground. But that's all rotted out now and fell in. And
yeah.
I guess you couldn't find it anymore.
Well, now, the story of the silver mine, is that really true or is that just a story?
That's right here on my property, right above my orchard here.
You think that's just a legend or do you think it really was?
No, it really was. Because I can remember when there was a great big pile dumped there and you could crack them stones open. And they were veins of silver, and but you can't find any history. I couldn't find any credit anywhere about it. But they claim that was shipped to Philadelphia and smelted up there, Philadelphia. And a lot of people even said, old man Bowdy, he said, yes, sir. He said, I seen the money that was made. He said, Kugels had a barrel in here right inside the door. And he had a barrel full of money, silver money. Well, oh, boy, a barrel.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, really. Well, it must not have been a good enough quality silver to for them to keep on using it for very long.
As the story, I think you'll find out in there. As the story goes, this thing started right after the Civil War. The Eisenhowers owned the limestone, the nearest limestone quarry, and they had to have limestone, you know, for putting the clean yarn. But anyhow, he raised the price of his stone. Well, someone, they didn't want to pay it. Someone said, why don't we quarry our own? They said, we got a problem with limestone right up there. Well, they went up there, and they started in there again the breast of that. They got a great big hole up there where they went in and blasted it out.
Yeah.
And they got a bunch up there at the furnace, and when they started to use this stuff, it wouldn't work. They found out it was great quartz. And while it was doing this, they'd get great big veins and big chunks. It was real blue with the shiny blue stuff I think it maybe some lead associated with it because they were some dull black. But then this real shiny blue, they claimed that was the silver.
Oh.
But old man Jake sent, I cracked out some up there, some pretty good specimens, you know, and he sent them to Carson City, Nevada, and had it assayed, and I don't know whether they did or not. I found out that he'd done an awful lot of lying, old man Jake, that owned the plate.
Yeah.
He claimed to set it out there, and come back and said they even found traces of gold in it. Well, all I ever found was iron pyrites, you know.
Yeah.
Well, it looked like gold.
Yeah, you know. Fool's gold.
Fool's gold, yes, that's all it was. Mm-hmm. And that's all in this rock. Now, when they drilled my well out here, they've been down 36 feet and they hit that solid rock. And they stayed in that solid rock for 160 feet. And at 145 feet, they struck a vein of water down in there. And good Lord, it popped up out of there. And they couldn't measure it. I got so much water they couldn't measure it. And we drilled a well down to the little house here. They hit the same thing. And once in a while, when they pumped the settlers out, you know, you'd see this iron praise out there. It looked like gold. It shined like gold.
Up there around the church, when we drilled that well, we had to go real deep because
it's all slag.
It's all that old fill and everything in there. And you have to get down below that to get good water.
Yeah.
Because we had always had dug wells, and, of course, the water was terrible.
Yeah.
It was all full of that iron stuff and everything.
You know, on the other side, you know, the Holtzes up here, they got a well that's only 18 feet deep. You know, they didn't get through any, couldn't have went through any rock.
No.
But then over here at Patsy's place, I give Bob 3 acres, and he built a house there where Michaels lives, and then over here at this other house, I gave Patsy 2 acres. And when they got a driller in there, he set up there and started down, and his drill kept veering off. And he said, I can get a slant rock. I got to move over a little bit. He moved over a little bit, went down there, and the drill still slanted off a little bit. He went on over then, about that far, and went down, and started, and he hit a solid place. And it hit that rock at 17 feet. And at 26 feet, that drill fell through the rock into an underground stream. And Bob's got the same thing over at his house.
Is that
right? Oh, yeah, underground streams, yeah, you can't begin to pump them down.
No, I know. It's really... Well, at least you're fortunate to have good water and that much of it.
Yes. Down here, the fellow went down 105 feet. And down about... I don't know, 40 or 50, maybe 60 feet. He struck just a little bit of a vein down there. And I was down there one time, the sun was shining, and he had a glass where he could shine down in, took a couple of glasses, you know, shine it down, and you can't get a light as good as that.
Yeah.
And shine down, and you can see it squirting out. And after I had it done, Bob didn't have his house done. He said, Dad, how about letting us move in the house first when I got it ready for occupancy? He said, how about letting us move in that until we get our house? I said, sure, go ahead. At first, Fraley's had quit keeping store, and I had Patsy and Carol here, and I was going to build them a little store down there. Well, I built it, 17. Yeah, I think 24 by 30 or something. I think that's all of it. I was going to have a small store. Mm-hmm. And after I was building, got the roof on, I began to think, what am I going to do with this? These girls get married, gets away from here. I'll have a store in my hand, and I just turn it into a house, two-bedroom house. Two bedrooms, a bath, a living room, kitchen.
Yeah.
It's big enough for a small family.
Yeah. Well, that mulatta that was supposed to have brought, supposed to have died, that worked up on the up in the charcoal or something, and they brought him down, put him in an iron cast,
oh, yeah,
and brought him
that
down.
Oh, yeah, I think that was one of the Pattersons. Now, a lot of people said they were mulattoes. I believe they were Indians.
Oh.
Because they weren't black. They were kind of red, you know, red color.
Yeah.
And I think they were they were Indians.
Oh, it was a Patterson then?
Yeah, one of the old Pattersons.
Well, and they lived up around Phillips the Light, didn't they?
Yes. Yeah, up out on Bob's Hill.
Yeah.
And up there on what they call a hog cabin flat. And the Pattersons kept hogs. And they'd build little shelters for them for the old sows when they had their pigs, you know, up there. And, well, the hogs live right out in the woods. Well, huckleberry time, you know, and chestnut time and acorn, they got fat, you know.
They get fat
there in the woods. And this old Patterson cut wood and burnt charcoal. And they had this smallpox epidemic. And he died, and people knew he died. And he was afraid to go get it, afraid they'd get it, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Until got the town drunk, I don't know who. Well, old Tommy Holtz told me this. By golly, old Tommy said, this old fella said the people wanted to go up and get him, they didn't want to lay him up there, let him lay up there and rot. He's in summertime, warm weather. Then he said, they went to him and said, hey, you go up and get him, we'll give you a quart of good whiskey. Well, he said, you get me the whiskey, I'll go get him. But I don't know. And he said there was still one of them old cast iron coffins. Now, they were pretty heavy. And they hooked up a horse to a cart, or a mule, I don't know, a mule or a horse, to a cart. And he went up and got him. Now, he was supposed to get that man and put him in that. I don't know whether he could have done that or not, whether he was strong enough.
Yeah.
But then, them caskets, I don't know, coffins, they were about, I don't know, the arm was about 3/8 of an inch thick, a pretty near a half inch, you know. Well, you take an iron coffin, I seen them, they were big. A man might.
Well, maybe he had a thing like, you know, they used to have those old-time sleds that they pulled behind.
He said they hooked up a cart, and he brought it down here and buried him.
Mm-hmm.
He's supposed to bury. And I thought, I was hoping they'd find him back here, but they, and, well, the newer part of the graveyard is up next to the road. The old part is down here. They started down here and then worked up, you know.
Mm-hmm.
We could tell that because there was handmade nails, what they call them, blacksmith nails. Handmade nails under the first ones. And after they got up there a little ways, they began to find regular machine-cut nails. Now, they started to make machine-cut nails here in 1789. Well, that's still way back.
You mean that people were buried there in 1789?
Yeah.
Oh.
About how the people lived and how they done, and I don't know whether it's in there. I think it's in there about the spies. You know, during the Revolutionary War, there was two spies, Alan Cameron, marched from Canada under the guidance of the inner chief of White Eyes, and he dropped two spies off, and they come down and they took charge of an old house across the creek. That is, you know, up here along the road. It was not too far from the road. After you go up this way and cross the creek, it was just in there a little ways, and still it's part of the foundation in there yet.
Mm-hmm.
That house, Tommy Holtz told me, he said, like Annie, there were spies here one time, and they said, they found out they was in there, and somebody told the authorities about it. They said, Captain Prigger, I found out later, Captain Jacob Prigger, he was with the Council of Safety.
Mm-hmm.
He was notified, and took some men and went up there, and when they got close to the building, one of these spies fired on, well, they didn't shoot at him, or did him.
Okay.
Fired one of the guns, and they figured then that they actually must have been spies. They was figuring on it anyhow. And they went down and got an old 12-pound cannon and got some powder and a couple of cannonballs. Went up there and set it up there. He was going to blow the house down. He said, I again, he said, they shot into this house. And he said, the old hickory logs were so hard. He said, The ball went in like that, then it bounced back. He said, bounce back, nearly hit him. But it's in Sharp's history about, they was the Tories.
Yeah.
Spies here.
Oh, yeah.
In this area, and he said Captain Jacob Prigger finally broke it up. It's in Sharp's history. Yeah. So there must have been something to it.
Yeah, well, I know there were plenty of British sympathizers around the area.
And you know, they went out here then about Hamburg, and they sent a couple of spies into Frederick, and they was caught. They caught them here. And these guys, they took to Frederick and they put them in jail. Well, then they hung a bunch of them. And they were supposed to be hung, drawn, quartered,